I'm ready for Heretic.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Molly Glover, Nick Glover, and Tim Wick.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks. Geeks without God.
This week, we're talking about the movie Heretic, a tense psychological thriller about religion, starring Hugh Grant as the villain? Is that right?
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Molly Glover, joined as always by my co-hosts, Nick Glover.
Hello.
And Tim Wick.
I am God.
Oh, Tim's God.
Oh, Heavenly God.
Oh, Heavenly.
That's what I discovered when I did all of my research about religion, that I am God.
Oh, you found all. Oh, that's so great. This is really convenient because we're talking about the movie Heretic.
Oh.
Hugh Grant. Oh. We are going to spoil the shit out of this movie. If you have not seen this movie and you don't want it spoiled, then just pause, go watch Heretic, come on back. We'll be here. We're not going anywhere. The episode will be up. But there are some things that I think are worth not getting spoiled if that's the kind of person you are. That's how I am. I don't like spoilers. So I want to make sure you're aware because we're going to talk about every single bit of this plot.
Yeah, like literally every minute.
All right.
Every minute of the plot.
They're gone. They're off. They're trying to find the movie. They're going to watch it. Okay. So this movie, Heretic, the trailer, very, very, made it to me seem like it was a horror movie. It seemed to me that it was a movie about religious fanaticism, maybe even an horror. And so I didn't really look up anything else about it going in. I'm a person who likes to go into movies not really knowing what I'm in for.
We saw friends posting about it and general positive.
Yep. And I like Hugh Grant a lot as an actor. And it seemed like he was, from the trailers, like he was playing against type, playing a bad guy, as it were, or at least the antagonist of the film. And so I was interested. I love horror. I like religious horror okay, as long as it isn't, demons and possession, which is a little ho-hum to me. But so I really wasn't sure what to expect. I'm just going to walk you through the basics of this movie. So we've got two young missionaries, Mormon missionaries. They're Church of Latter-day Saints. These two women are out on their mission together in pairs, and they have been assigned to go talk to somebody whose name and address they have, because this is a person who is on their list as somebody who wants to know more about the Church of Latter-day Saints.
The leads.
That they get the leads. Yes, they get the sales leads. You got the leads. Always be closing.
It's like Glengarry Glen Ross without the swearing.
Yes. Yeah. Always be Christing. these two very young girls, and one of them is very timid and like your typical, stereotypical, I'd say, Christian conservative, young woman. And the other one seems like maybe she's a little intellectual. She's flirting with questions, which we know is dangerous for those LDS types. And so they get to this man's house, Mr. Reed, Hugh Grant. He invites them in. He says his wife is there and she'll just be right along because they're young women. There are rules. His wife has to be present so that they can talk. They can't talk to a man alone. And so she needs to be there. And he's like, no problem. She's just baking a pie. She'll be right here. As they come in, he says something which I immediately picked up on and was like, get the fuck out of there. But he's like, I hope it's okay. All of the walls and the ceiling of the house are full of metal.
Yes.
They both go, sure. And I'm like, girl.
Your phone will not work. You cannot call for help.
Yeah, don't enter a strange man's Faraday cage. Like, what are you doing? And so in any event, they come in. And they're talking to him. And I will say, the writing of this movie was very good, especially at the beginning. It was very tense. It was very minimalist. The
acting super good.
The acting was very good and also very minimalist. The people's expressions were, a widening of eyes, a tensing. It felt the tension was ratcheting up moment by moment as these young women are, uncomfortably perched on a couch. They've given him their coats. They are, it's nighttime. This is the last stop before they would go back to their.
There's a storm outside. It's snowing.
It's a snowstorm. It's very cold and blustery. And so they're, this guy wants to know more, and they're enthusiastically talking about Heavenly Father and the kingdom thereafter, the reward. And he's asking questions.
He's very knowledgeable in his questions, though.
He does.
Yeah, he's got a marked up Book of Mormon.
Yes, he brings out a Book of Mormon, and it's full of tabs. And one of the girls is very excited, like, "Oh, you've read it more than us." And they feel very. But it's, you can tell something's wrong. It just feels wrong. And the house is very dimly lit and old fashioned. I would argue it looked like it hadn't been updated since the 70s. It looked very, which, you know, pretty normal for this age. And so then he disappears to go purportedly find his wife. They realize that what they're smelling is a blueberry pie scented candle and decide they're going to leave. Door's locked, can't leave. Got to go get their coats. They follow him in further into the house. The house just feels like this snare that is bringing them further and further into the house. And so they end up down in the basement, and there's two doors, and one door he marks belief and the other door he marks disbelief. And he's like, you know, very like, tell me, do you believe or do you not believe? What door are you going to go through? And it doesn't matter. Both doors lead to another basement. And at this point, we know this dude's going to murder these girls. Like, it feels
that's the plan. The plan seems to be, well, I would argue the plan is to murder one of them.
It feels like one or both. I mean, it was hard for me to decide genuinely.
Well, he's going to murder the other one eventually. But I mean, when we get to the room at the end of the movie with all the women in cages, I feel like the goal is to get one of them into a cage.
Oh, maybe. But at this point, we don't know that. So at this point, it feels like they're probably going to die. You know, and they have these weird doors, and both doors go to the same place, and they end up, you know, going one of the door, and he leaves to do something. I don't even remember what his reason is. He's like, I'm going to go get something else, and he just leaves.
I'm going to go not worry about you because I believe that I have complete control of the situation.
Yeah. And so then he ushers in this woman who she's very decrepit, and she looks like she's dying and dirty. And she eats a blueberry pie, which he then says is poisoned, and she dies.
They're going to witness a miracle.
She's going to come back to life. That's when he leaves, and the woman maybe moves. And this is where shit gets really muddled, I would say. Because, like, later they say that this woman was swapped out with another woman when they weren't looking. And that's why she comes back to life.
I mean, she was. You see the dead body.
Yeah.
Later.
Yeah. Later. Yeah. So I don't know. It the whole point ends up being, as Tim mentioned, then there are all these women in cages that he keeps in cages to feel their prophecy.
To control. Like
make them into prophets. He keeps saying he knows the one true God. He studied every religion. He went to every single one, and the one true God is control. So ultimately, we, you know, our heroines, you know, they are faced with this, and their elder is trying to get to them, of course, but can't because he's stolen he's moved their bikes and he doesn't know they're there. And obviously the house is soundproofed. So I guess just, I don't know, what did you guys think in that first two thirds of the movie when we didn't exactly know what was going on? I would like to know, how did you feel? Like, what were you thinking was going to happen?
I frankly, the first half or maybe two thirds of this movie, I really fucking loved.
Yeah.
I thought all the tension that they build up in the conversations it's just that single room of the house, the first room that they walk in, where we keep on getting hints that there's something wrong. Mm-hmm. And the two missionaries are kind of sort of picking up on something here and there, but they, you know, gotta convert, gotta get those numbers, and they persevere. And like, I think right up until, and even in the next room, I loved most of the next room, the fake chapel,
the fake chapel with the two doors,
with the Monopoly analogy.
Yes, the Monopoly analogy was really fucking good. Like, I liked all that
Tell
stuff.
Tell us the Monopoly analogy.
So, he sets out a copy of Monopoly, and he's like, you know, million, you know, 10 million people have played this game or whatever. It's very popular. Everyone knows Monopoly.
The most popular board game or something.
Yeah. But a lot of people don't know the Landlord's Game, which is the you know, anti-Monopoly predecessor that was ripped off for Monopoly. And then he pulls out a copy of the Torah and a copy of the Christian Bible. And then he pulls out a brand new copy of Monopoly with, like, I don't know, credit cards.
It's
and
like
stuff.
Dogopoly or whatever, yeah.
And then he pulls out what book is the third one?
Quran.
The Quran. Quran. Yes, yes. Yeah. And then he pulls out a, like, crazy regional specific rebranded copy of Monopoly and a book of Mormon to say, like, the crazy regional variant.
Like, the Bible is Monopoly, the Torah is the Landlord's Game, the Quran is the Monopoly but with updated whatever's
his point in this is to talk about iteration and how all religion is born from previous religion, and how all these religious ideas and stories are inherited from older religions, iterated upon, improved upon, rebranded. I mean, and it's absolutely true. If you look at, like, so many Christian holidays are, you know, rebranded from other religions. There's all this stuff about Horus and Mithras and all the other gods that are very similar that he talks about. I was on board for all that.
He has, like, that rumor. He's like, every god depicted here was born on December 25th.
Or
like, it's a sun. Like, it's,
they all share common.
They all share stuff.
They all share something with the Jesus story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I, you know, right up, I presenting them the two doors and making them choose belief or disbelief, fucking loved it. I think as soon as they leave that second room, that's where I started to lose interest in the movie.
Yeah, so I will say that I also, a lot of that was really good. And then it was like, oh, and then she goes to, so earlier she reached, the Paxton reaches into her pocket and finds Barnes's bike key, which was in the wrong pocket. And that's how they knew he went through their coats. And they're like, ah, something's up here with this. But then her having that key ends up mattering for unlocking a door.
It
was all part of his master control plan.
Yeah. I don't know. Tim, what did you think about that first?
Now I'll go into this saying we had not decided we were going to watch this movie. And so I knew pretty much everything about it by the time I watched it. I'd watched a video talking about the movie, because sometimes, especially with horror movies, where I'm just like, I'm not super into horror, but I enjoy knowing the beats of, because I write horror, right? I mean,
and you want to be pop culturally familiar with things,
which is ironic, but I like to watch things about good horror movies as I think about it as a writer, even if I'm like, I'm not sure I'm going to spend the time to watch this movie. And I kind of planned on watching it, but decided to watch, I didn't care about spoilers. So I knew all of it going in. Now, all that said, I think that what happens before we get into the basement is considerably more interesting. And I think that I talked about it a little bit before we started recording. One of the things that bugged me about this movie was it is essentially a movie about two young women being victimized by a man in a position of power. And once they get into the basement, that's really what it is. It's them in a position where they are completely at his mercy, trying to figure out how they can get away from him. And that, to me, is less compelling as a narrative. So I will say, that when we got to that part, I was kind of like, this is... Even though it's still, you know, Hugh Grant's character trying to complete his masterwork, what do we want to say? His manifesto, you know, and even though when we get to the basement, it's still all part of the manifesto, but it feels more like traditional horror film fare, I guess.
Yeah.
Less
of an original thing, more of a thing that's been done before a bunch.
That's to me, I think the thing that was, so I love horror. known to people who listen to the show, but I don't watch a ton of horror movies. I mostly love, you know, reading horror lit, but I do love it in general. And I didn't have the same problem that you did, Tim, with that, you know, with the sense of it being two young women and, you know, the guy and everything as a power dynamic. But for me, it was more just like, it was boring because it was so expected. I was hoping there was going to be some kind of, not necessarily like a plot twist, but a twist on the idea of, oh, we're stuck in his house and what do we do? Like a twist on that. And it never did. There was never anything like, oh, and she's going to get away because of thing, or, oh, they're because of their, you know, because of something, there's going to be something different here. And so when she gets to the basement and then there's all the women in the cages, number one thought I had was, well, this is just logistically so difficult because like, I understand that they were all supposed to look filthy and decrepit, but like if you had that many human beings locked in cages in one spot, and the cages were not like stand up cages, they were like dog kennels. So like, I mean, these women would not, I'm sorry, they just wouldn't be alive. It's just crazy. And like,
and he's misting them and keeping them cold.
Yeah, keeping them cold.
He's keeping them cold. They're not just getting sick and spreading the flu. It's I mean, it's just,
it's a dank dungeon that's staircase after staircase
he's in a populated area. He doesn't have like some distant farmhouse. Well,
and the implication is he's been doing this to missionaries for a while. That's what I think that it's like at some point, wouldn't somebody be like, we got to stop sending girls to this fucker's house.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think from that point, from before she goes down the ladder, maybe even going as far back as, you know, the pie and the prophet parts of this, I feel like if the movie had at that point gone supernatural, it would have been more interesting.
I agree.
If it had turned out that he was in fact a part of some actual real malicious religion with magic or a god or something like that would have been so much more interesting. How fucking awesome if it would have been turned out if he was like, actually he's, you know, a member of the cult of Mithras and Mithras is a real god and he's bringing back this ancient religion. It would fit so well with all his gripes about iteration and how it's all repurposed and repackaged. And I get that that is completely against the point that the movie is trying to make, but the point the movie is trying to make is not a new point and is boring.
Yeah. I genuinely was.
Hey guys, did you know that religion is used to control people? Wow, big brain.
Oh my God, did you know that if a man contrives every single thing, he can trap teenagers and kill them? Yeah, no shit. Like, it felt very. I was actually expecting that too. When I got really excited when he said, after I looked at all these religions, I found the one true God. And I was like, okay, this is exciting because this guy's going to talk about how he's obviously a crazy murderer. That's to me, that was obvious right away, just from the way the movie was shot. But
you don't go through that much effort to build a murder house and not be a murderer.
What's the point of a murder house if you can't kill anybody?
And the candle and all that. I mean, it was very clearly a trap, but it just felt like, I was hoping there would be some, even if it wasn't real, even if it was just his delusion, but that his delusion was that he was sacrificing to this God.
Oh, yeah.
It would have been so much more interesting than somehow he's keeping 8 to 10 women alive in cages constantly. He's feeding them enough that they're staying alive and misting them to keep them cold and sad, but they're not getting sick. I mean, he's clipping their nails.
They're not choosing, and he says very clearly, they've chosen to stay, that they have accepted control. I mean, I understand that that's not really true. He believes it to be true. He believes that they are staying of their own free will, but they're not. They've been effectively cowed into believing that they have no escape. They cannot escape, so they make the best of the horrible situation they've been put in, really.
And even that, like, makes no sense because they're in dog kennels. So, like, no, they haven't. It would have been more interesting if she'd gone down a ladder and found, like, a bustling tradwife community.
Right.
Where these women were, like, serving him and helping him murder girls or something,
Same, like, weak and emaciated prophet dress women, but they're all praying in another like fake chapel or something.
You can't tell me that these women who are literally locked in cages, they can't even sit up in or have accepted that they're there. I mean, that's like saying, I don't know. That's just so dumb. None of it made sense. And so his whole point felt dumb. And it was so disappointing to me. The one thing I liked was that, you know, you saw when he slit the throat of Sister Barnes, it happened really fast and out of nowhere. And so then her steaming to die and Sister Paxton being like moving on, which, you know, the strong one dies, as it were, and the weaker one has to figure it out. But then Sister Barnes coming back to life, not being dead yet. And
after the prayer,
and using Chekhov's plank full of nails, which I was very happy to see. Because as soon as that happened, I was like, well, that's going in somebody.
Chekhov's nail plank.
Yeah. So that was really great. And I did enjoy that. And of course, you know, Sister Paxton gets away and the butterfly lands on her hand to tell her that her friend's soul is off.
All those butterflies that survive snowstorms.
Flies in snowstorms all the time. It's very normal. The monarch is known to inhabit lands with snow. But that part felt very contrived. And at the end, I remember thinking, like, so who is this movie for? Like, who is it for? Because it's not really a horror movie in the sense that I would say that it didn't, like, I mean, it was a suspense movie with horrific elements to me.
I bet this is more of a horror movie. I bet to an extent, to a point of diminishing returns that happen very quickly, the more religious you are, the more of a horror movie this is.
Sure.
But then you get so religious that it stops being a horror movie again.
And like, I mean, go ahead.
I think, we were talking about before we started recording, the Rotten Tomatoes score on this is pretty high. Both audience and critic. So, you know, as I sit here and I'm a little bit critical of it, and I admit I liked it better than I thought I would. I didn't like the fact that it turned into basically, he's basically a serial rapist and serial killer. That's what he is. No matter what the dressing is.
We don't know he rapes him.
Yeah, but let's guess that he does.
All right.
They don't show it.
Agreed. There was no element of sexuality in this film whatsoever.
That's true.
There was nothing about sex. There was nothing about sex.
I kind of liked that, actually.
There was no indication of it whatsoever. Not even a feeling of him being, he wasn't even leering. Like, it was zero sex involved.
Certainly a serial killer. He's certainly a serial killer. And the entire thing that he's doing is using religion as control in a different way than religion is actually used as control, which I think is the point the movie's trying to make, right? He's saying, well, religion is controlling you, but he's controlling them through religion just as well.
Yeah.
I think this movie does resonate with a lot of horror fans.
Audience score is lower. The audience score is 76 and the critic score is 91.
I feel like the audience score is like what I would grade it, right? Like if I was giving this movie a grade, I would say it's like
a
B minus or a C plus. If I was grading it just on that first part of the movie, you know, drawing that line, I thought that first part of the movie was an A. Mm-hmm. An A to me. Absolutely. That's how much I didn't really care for the end of it was. And I don't hate the end of it. It just, in contrast to the beginning, was so much worse.
Mm-hmm.
It just felt, even though I think it wanted to be about more, it didn't feel like it. I didn't feel like it got there.
Yeah. So did you have any parts that you really loved? Like, was there anything any part where you were like that in hindsight was like an awesome bit?
Yes. You mentioned it before when he first brings the missionaries in, he's like, oh, I'm sure you can smell, you know, my wife, she's just in the other room. She's just over there. She's baking a pie. Can you guess what kind of pie it is? Oh, blueberry. You're right. All that shit. To have that blueberry candle sitting right in front of them and burning with the label turned away. And then he disappears for so long that there's no fucking way they're not going to figure out that that's a blueberry pie candle and that they've been duped and that, yes, their suspicion, their worries have been confirmed that there's something nefarious going on here. I love that so much because it's like he doesn't care if they realize that it's a ruse at that point because it's they don't realize how too late
it's too late. He's seen
it's
everything.
It's so too late for them at that point. But he doesn't care. He's going to move forward with his little game. And I feel like there's a lot of that in this movie, a lot of things like that where it's like, I don't care if you know I'm a con man or whatever. I don't care if you know that you're in trouble and you're not getting out of here. Like it's that's not the point I'm trying to make.
Tim, what about you?
I liked that part, and I agree. I think until they get to the basement, the movie's really, really solid. There's a moment, I can't remember exactly what was being said, but Sister Paxton is, and Sister Barnes are trying to assert themselves and be able to leave. And the camera just focuses on Paxton's face, and there's just a bead of sweat that's rolling down the side of her face. And that's just, it was really, really masterfully done.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lots of tension.
The tension ratcheting up was really great. I felt like a thing that's very frustrating for me anytime I'm watching a horror movie, and it's less so in a book, but in a book sometimes too, is when it's like, but why would you do that? Like, why did they ever leave the sitting room? I would not have left the sitting room. I would have, he's going to have to drag me. I mean, there's no way. And I think that for me, what I loved about that is, why did they? Because of their mission. Because their mission is to get this guy more information about their religion. And so, and they've been trained not just by their church. I mean, yes, to a large degree by the Church of Latter-day Saints, but also as young women in America in general. They have been socialized to be polite and to assume good intentions and to listen to their elders and to do what adults say, even though they are also adults, but they're not, you know, full adults yet. They're and so it's this idea that, like, well, we have to follow him into the basement. Otherwise, that would be rude. And to me, that's just such a, like, because, like, in a lot of times in horror movies, the girls are dragged or snatched or drugged or pulled or hurt or otherwise, you know, they're lured in a way that is different from, well, I'm going to leave the room. Oh, I see you saw the candle. Well, if you're interested, you can't leave and I will be in the basement. And I want to show you something.
The way out is this way.
Yeah. The way out. You saw the footprint in my house. It can't be very far, right? And they're like, sure. Like, they're architects.
Because they looked at the back of the house when they walked up to the front. Or
It would be rude otherwise. And that's just such a, it's a never stated.
Yeah.
And it's such an underlying conceit as to what gets them and what does drive them. So, like, the whole time while I was like, oh my God, I would not go down there, I understand why they are. It's not that idiocy of, like, so many times in horror movies, the women in particular are so stupid and they're doing things that I don't even understand why. It's like, you know, the guy's like, why don't you just get in the car, the stranger? And you're like, yeah, I'll get in the stranger's car. I mean, come on. Like, this just felt more like, all we have to do is just listen to this old guy like we've done a bunch of times, and then everything will be fine because we trust in our faith and everything else. That part I did like a lot. I also love the actress who plays Sister Barnes. She's in Yellow Jackets.
Yeah.
She's fucking incredible.
Yeah.
She is just absolute. I look forward to her career because I think she's going places. She's really good at acting. And
she's not going out of that basement, though, is she?
No, getting out of that basement.
She's in that basement forever.
Yeah. I would also say, like, for a cast of really just three, the movie held your attention and was a good, you know, character study in that sense. I know we talked a lot about what we didn't like. Was there a specific part that made you go, like, fart noise, like, thumbs down to this movie? Or when did the movie lose you? Maybe is a better way to put it. Like, was there a specific moment?
I think it was when they went down the ladder and it was like, when she's like, I think you swapped the women.
Yeah,
the America didn't have
body down there.
My back was turned for 30 seconds, and in that time, you came down the creepy damp staircase through the loud metal door, picked up this person,
a human body,
dug up this pit trap that's buried in sand, threw her down the pit trap, escorted out a replacement woman, set her in place. That part right there is just so fucking far-fetched that I think it took me out for the rest of the movie. Like that bit.
I agree. That to me was where I lost it, because I was expecting him to say something like, well, I've been feeding them poison for so long, it takes much more than that to actually kill her, you know, and that it wasn't that it was a miracle. The body swap, I was like, that's so dumb. There's so many other ways the pie could just not be poisoned. She's so under your control. She's faking it. Like, I mean, I don't know, like a lot of other things. Yeah, I agree with you on that. That was a moment for me where I just kind of went, eh?
Tim, what about you?
I guess it was the girls in cages, because I felt that it was kind of a pedantic, oh, he just does this over and over again.
Yeah.
He's been doing this. He manages to lure women into his house and go through this whole thing over and over again. And it implies that he manages to convince them to stay in those cages because control is the only true religion, and they accept that control somehow, you know, and
except
that
they're all locked in.
Yeah.
Right.
Like so.
Yeah. But I mean, but that's what he's implying. Right. And I'm just like,
Sophie Thatcher, who plays Barnes in the show Molly mentioned, Yellow Jackets, she plays the young version of Juliette Lewis's character. So if you can imagine her being the teenage high school version of Juliette Lewis, it's fucking phenomenal casting. Really good show.
Yeah, I will say too, I like Hugh Grant.
This is how fun for him.
Taking turn. I'm glad he's moving on into other types of characters. I think as people age, it's always nice to see them not try to hang on. Like, he's not doing, you know, romantic grandpa movie, I guess. Like
he's the kind of like bumbling buffoon romantic lead guy who's, oh, terribly sorry, I'm so awkward. Oh.
But that came across with this character at first, where it was like, oh, I'm just a harmless old man who's, I'm British, and oh gosh.
My wife.
Oh yes. And I think he did a really good job. I will say, to some degree, I felt like the part with the Mithras and all the other religions, maybe it's because I've been one of three hosts of an atheist podcast for almost 13 years, but I was kind of like, part of me was like, who's like, what? This movie, and going, what?
High schoolers.
Yeah, well, I got to tell you, a lot of people probably are.
Yeah,
more than you'd care to know might have been surprised by that.
Yeah, it felt a lot like your 17-year-old cousin at a family holiday who's like, actually, did you know that Easter comes from Eostre, the goddess of the dawn? And it's like, yeah, brah, we all know.
I wanted on the record that at least one time during the movie, in that first half or whatever, when Hugh Grant's character said something about his wife and, oh, my wife this or my wife that or someone looking at my wife, Molly absolutely 100% turned to me and went, my wife.
My wife.
So I just need everyone to know that happened to me. That happened to me.
It happens to you a couple
so
times.
So noted.
It happens a couple times a week. That's true.
Anyway, so if you saw the movie Heretic, tell us what you thought. Maybe you loved it. Don't be embarrassed. It's okay. Don't be like, oh no, the people of the podcast didn't like it so much.
It's subjective.
It's subjective. Horror especially is subjective. Horror is like comedy in that it is eliciting a very difficult reaction out of you that you can't force. It either happens or it doesn't. You either laugh or you don't. You're either scared or you're not. It is a very like... It, you know, and to me, this movie was the comedy equivalent of a sensible chuckle, where you're going, sure, you know, like, and not laugh out loud funny. I was at no point was I scared once the actual horror stuff showed up. But you know, that is also just my experience. Your lived experience may have done it differently for you.
Yeah, and I guess I will say that I was concerned for the well-being of the two young women in this film. So, well, I don't think there were any jump scares, which is good because I don't really care for jump scares. Anyway, if the intent of the film is to create tension and to make me care about the individuals who are in peril, it certainly succeeded at that.
Yes, I would agree with that. I absolutely cared about them and was like the whole movie trying to figure out what's going to be the thing. How are they going to get out? You know, there's two types of mystery movies, the whodunit and the how catch 'em. This to me was like a how catch 'em horror movie. Like, sure, we know what's happening. Sure. So how are they going to get away? Like, it's not a matter of, is he a bad guy or not? We know he's a bad guy. How are they going to get away?
Sure.
And I think that the Topher Grace character was completely unnecessary.
Yeah.
The elder who was checking up on them and who came to the house and went, "You haven't seen him?" And he went, "Nope." And he went, "Okay." And left.
Yeah.
Like, and if what you're saying, like what you said, Tim, is, you know, if multiple missionaries specifically from the LDS have been sent here and then never been heard from again,
at some point, somebody's going to connect the dots, aren't they?
And I can't imagine it was only Mormon missionaries. I'm imagining he reached out to a lot of different.
Oh, sure. Religions. Jehovah's Witnesses. He's got at least one Jehovah's Witness down there.
But as he said, there's no Jews in those cages because they don't recruit. So I guess the lesson is Judaism.
Judaism.
Play the landlord's game. Be a Jew. Don't get captured.
Oof.
Yeah, in general, I like seeing these movies. I like when religion can be horror and there's not possession. This is a rare religious horror movie that doesn't involve possession. So I guess I'll give it points for that. We have been Geeks Without God. If you like us, you can follow us on, we are on Blue Sky. And when I remember to post, it happens. And we're also on Facebook and on Patreon. If you want to become a patron, you can get episodes early and listen to us. And sometimes we'll put up special stuff if we can get around to it. We're busy people.
We do a lot of stuff.
We're still doing episodes every other week right now. That's going to continue for the foreseeable future. We look forward to maybe coming back to weekly, but a lot of it's going to depend on schedules and our ability to come up with new episodes. So if you have an idea for an episode, send it to us all at geekswithoutgod.com. We would love to hear it. And as always, we will see you next Tuesday for some variation of next Tuesday. Bye.
Bye.
Whatever could be in the basement? It's a quandary.
It's a dead body, isn't it?
Ooh, you'll have to find out. What a moral dilemma.
Geeks without God. Geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks. Geeks without God.
Need more Geeks Without God? Go to our website, read our blog posts, find us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter at Geeks Without God.
Social media!
We're geeks,
we're geeks,
we're geeks without God.
We're geeks,
we're geeks, we're geeks without God.
We're geeks, geeks without God.
I love the abbreviation for Blue Sky because it sounds like something the Swedish chef would say.